Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Adams off the double, what a shot by Steven Adams going to the reverse. Leonard, chased by Westbrook. Leonard on the way. Time running down, and Westbrook with a deep, deep three-pointer.
How do you want it? That's what Westbrook's asking.
San Antonio by five. Westbrook. Oklahoma City up by a point. Very similar to what took place in game two. Waiters gets it in this time. Westbrook to the bucket. He scores and a foul with 6.3 to go. The Spurs felt there should have been a travel.
Two plays in which Westbrook kept going. One when he thought it was a shot clock violation and he kept playing. And this is who you need to be, Westbrook. Not who the critics want you to be. Not who some fans want you to be. Be the best Westbrook that you can be, getting the and one late in the game in San Antonio.
We got stops, and Russ was a maniac tonight, you know, keeping us in it. He hit a big three and got a big driving layup. We didn't panic late in the game. We got, like I said, we got stops. You know, it was a good win for us.
Coach drawed up a good play. We executed very well towards the end of the game. And once they didn't foul, I just tried to sit in attack mode and get to the basket and finish.
That's why they call it a game. Things happen. It's not like we got beat by 30. The game went down to the wire. I didn't think anything got away from us. We made mistakes, but if one team didn't make any mistakes, the score would be 150-10. You got to make shots down the stretch. We lost a couple of boards there at the end in the fourth quarter, just like last game.
Drilled in the air toward left center field. That ball is hit well. It is hit deep. That ball is going to go. It's a home run for Nick Castellanos, who has done it yet again. Lifted in the air to center field. Shallow. That ball will drop. Base hit. One run scores as McCann comes in. Romine goes to third, and Miggy gets it done in a pinch. Here's the set on the 1-0. Swinging a drive in the air to center field. Here comes Ghost. He is there to make the catch.
Wow.
And the Tigers win.
Oh, baby, at last.
Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I was just about to say, do I have to do my own big voice? I can do my own big voice intro. You know, I've always wanted to do that, Kush.
Those are well-paying jobs, I understand.
I know. I have always, honest to goodness, I've often thought, I've been doing talk radio for nearly 20 years now, sports radio or news radio or political radio or whatever radio, in some form or another, for about 20 years. And I oftentimes have thought, man, I got to put in hours and hours and hours a day of show preparation, research. If I'm doing sports radio, I'm researching stats and history and games, et cetera, et cetera. And if I'm doing politics, I got to literally study history, you know, world wars and constitutional principles and blah, blah, blah. And then I think, why didn't I just do the big voice guy job when I got into radio? All he has to do is sit there and watch the scripts roll in written for him. He doesn't have to do any of the research. Just watch the scripts roll in before him, come across his screen, read them into the microphone, send them back to whoever sent them to him, and collect giant checks. We missed the calling, man. We missed our job. Well, I don't know about you. Do you feel like you have got the chops? You got the pipes to do big voice work if you had to?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mr. Big Voice and play-by-play. If I could somehow land that, I'd be happy forever.
No. Play-by-play is a totally different animal. Totally different.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
and I
Vin
love it.
Scully's voice is magical doing play-by-play, but his voice would not be now. The Bob France Afternoon Extract. He couldn't do the movie guy voice, you know, when you...
Yeah,
you know,
I guess you're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Play-by-play, there are some high-voice, squeaky-voice sons of guns who just tell great stories when they do play-by-play, you know, and they can just capture the moment of games and you know who the legends are in that field.
Sure.
Big voice guy is different. I don't think any of the big voice guys are legendary except for the one movie dude who actually died. Has it been almost 10 years now?
Oh, my gosh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Name's escaping me, but I do. And you're making me think, wow, it's been 10 years already.
I don't know. That's my guess, because I can't remember. Don LaFontaine. Here it is.
That was it.
And it was 8 years.
Okay.
He died in September of 2008. Don LaFontaine was the movie voice guy, and he died in 2008, and I can't remember how, and I guess it doesn't matter. It's just tragic and sad, because he wasn't that old. He wasn't that old, I don't think. Was he? He was, he's still not that old. He's 68. 68. There he was. Born in 1940, died in 2008, so he's 68 years old. Anyway, I've always wondered, could I do that? What do I have to do to get out of the talk show game and just get into the send me scripts and then send me checks game? Because I feel like I could big voice my own show. I really do. And this station. I could do the imaging for the station. And now, Drive Time with Mike Miller right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. I got the chops. I got the pipes when I'm not sick, of course. And then I sound like this right after my show. Kind of like I did Monday. In a little bit yesterday, but I got it. I got to get out of this game, man. Yeah, I mean, I love what I do, Kush.
Sure.
I mean, we come on. You know, we get paid to sit around and talk sports, for God's sake, which we love. And
yep.
We watch games. We'd watch them whether we got paid or not. And we'd argue with our friends about them whether we got paid or not. And so it's a great gig, but it does take a lot more hours than I'm going to sit down in front of the mic, and in about 30 minutes, I'm going to run through about 35 scripts, about a minute per, and I'm going to collect giant paychecks, and I'm going to golf the rest of the day. I don't have time to golf.
Ah, the sweet life.
Yeah, these guys got it made in the shade, honestly. So, yeah, so by the way, if you ever have a problem, if the computer freezes as you try to fire off the big voice intro,
Which is what just happened to start this whole thing.
I figured. That's the reason I brought it up, because I was about to just fill in. You know what? If that ever happens, just tell me I've got to step up and pinch hit for big voice man, and I'll do my own intro. I'll do my own intro and then my own welcome to the show, and I'll just do it all. Why not? I can play all five positions. I'm like Magic Johnson. Or LeBron James, according to what we were
discussing. The ultimate utility man.
There you go. I can do all of that. All right. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5. Jan Ticket. Just to put last things first, since Kush, you rounded out the montage with the Tigers finally snapping that losing streak. It ends at 7 games. And it took, according to the guy who's going to be our guest in 20 minutes at 3:35, Anthony Fenech from the Free Press, according to him, it took a blown call to snap that streak. Fenech's article today, and I can't wait to talk to him about this. Here's the start of it. The break the Detroit Tigers needed was not a big hit or a big pitch or a big play. It was a blown call. He said the umpires determined that Anthony Gost did not violate the new slide rule, the first-year slide rule, while trying to break up the double play at second in the sixth. The Tigers took the lead. They took advantage and then got the big play later, which, of course, is a Miguel Cabrera pinch hit, two-out RBI single. So the Tigers finally hang on to win a game over the Nationals last night. But, Anthony says it was a blown call. And yet the description given by Brad Ausmus after the game last night, and I don't know if you heard it, Jim, but the description that he gave, it really wasn't a blown call because the actions that Ghost took did not actually impact the play. According to baseball rules, a bona fide slide, that's a quote from the rule book apparently, at least according to Anthony because he put it in quotes, a bona fide slide occurs when a runner is able and attempts to reach the base with hand or foot, end quote. But while Ghost was able to reach the base, his attempt fell short of the standard. However, Brad Ausmus said, with the way our luck has been going with the replay recently, I had one finger crossed in my back pocket. And then he noted, although there's not a quote here from Anthony, then he noted that the rule says the slide has to alter the play or affect the turning of the double play, which it did not. So, in other words, was it a blown call or not? But either way, if a break finally went the Tigers' way, as they were saying, and a big sigh of relief from Ausmus, big sigh of relief from Ghost and virtually everybody else who was asked about it, and we'll talk to Fenech about that Like I said, about 15, 20 minutes.
And one side note going forward for the Tigers, and I'm sure we'll get into this with Anthony as well. You got the rubber match today. How can you not love this pitching matchup? It's Jordan
I love this.
It's Jordan Zimmermann going against the Nationals, first start against his former team. And who are the Nationals throwing out? Nobody in particular.
Naturally.
Just former Tiger, naturally, as you point out, Max Scherzer. That's love this matchup.
That is awesome. That is awesome. I really love that that little twist of fate, or the way the the rotations just worked out for both these teams. And Scherzer is saying he can't wait to face Miggy, and I'm sure it's vice versa. You know, I mean, this is just one of these very cool things.
And that's a good point, because Scherzer, of course, and Tigers fans, of course, remember this. When the Tigers acquired him originally, he had been in the National League with the Diamondbacks. So not many, if ever, has he faced Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah,
so
that was his first foray into the American League, was with the Tigers.
Yep, and I know we're in the interleague play era, but Arizona v. Detroit only happens once in a blue moon, basically.
Exactly, yes, exactly right. So it'll be very interesting to see how that whole thing matches up. And obviously, I'm sure Jordan Zimmermann is looking for it, well, as much as one can, to facing Bryce Harper.
Yep.
The defending National League MVP, unanimous, as we cleared up yesterday, unanimous MVP. And, so there's a couple of really cool storylines in tonight's game between the Tigers and the Nationals, the rubber match. Scherzer, by the way, not having the year that they expect from how much did he get again? I forget. Is it like $144 million guaranteed?
I'm double-checking the exact amount, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what the number was, but it was insane. And I remember thinking, the Tigers were probably wise not to match that number. The contract was just too big. I remember now. It's a 210. It was 7 years, 210.
Breaks down to about 22 a year.
7 years, 210 mil. Compare that to the deal that Strasburg just got from the Nats 2 days ago. Steven Strasburg gets a 7-year, $175 million extension. And Scherzer is not pitching like that guy, at least right now in the still very early part of this season, because Scherzer is sitting at, and I lost him, here he is, he's 3-2 with a 4.60 ERA. And obviously that is much worse than his career average, which is 3.49 ERA, and his career ERA, I should say, and the huge numbers that he put up for the Tigers. So anyway, and meanwhile, Jordan Zimmermann, by the way, is earning every cent, every cent that the Tigers.
In some ways,
him.
He's helped keep the Tigers somewhat afloat.
Yeah, 5-1 with a 1.10 ERA.
Microscopic.
Indeed. Although it's over a run now, so clearly he's slipping. All right. So we're going to talk a little baseball with Fennec coming up in about 3:35 or so, and then we're going to talk more baseball, Indian style, with Matt Lodi, at about 4:05. But in between now and then, I don't want to talk baseball. I want to talk NBA. And as great as last night's game was, and I'm feeling better and better and better about my strange Friday prediction. And, Jim, I know you weren't there, but Ben was there and Chris Lemieux were there. And we were talking about predictions, and some have come true and some have not come true. And I said there's no way, for example, to predict, the Cavaliers could stay as hot shooting as they were. They were bound to cool off and lose one of those games in Atlanta. Of course, that didn't happen. But I also did this, and I spent a great deal of time explaining it so that I could justify the shift in my position. As you know, all season long in the NBA, I have been saying, I understand the Warriors are setting ridiculous records, but look at the Spurs. There's like a 2-game difference. Everybody's sleeping on the Spurs. The Spurs are still the team that I would predict in a 7-game series with the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. I'm taking the Spurs. That's what I said all season long.
As we've said all season long too, Bob. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, unless you have a team like this year's Warriors, that's the only way you can have a 67-win team go under the radar.
Exactly. And that's exactly what they did. They were under the radar. But I said in a series, I'm taking the Spurs, and I think the Spurs will do that. But then on Friday, this is going into game 3 of the Spurs-Thunder series, I made a very bold prediction. I said, even though all year long I've been saying the Spurs are the team that I think that can take down the Warriors, I am now predicting, and this is with the series tied at 1 game apiece, I'm predicting that they won't even get to the Western Conference Finals to have that matchup with the Warriors. I think the Thunder are going to take both games in Oklahoma City and take a 3-1 lead back to San Antonio. And I think they're going to close out the Spurs in 7 and win this series. Now, as it turned out, they lost game three. They had it. They blew a fourth quarter opportunity. Russell Westbrook kind of went Russell. And you know what that means. He either goes off and goes crazy like he did last night.
Right.
Or he goes major mistake. He's out of control. He's a little wild. Turnover happy. Shot happy. And indeed, he took 31 shots, limited Kevin Durant just to 18 shots. And they lost in the late in the game to the Spurs. So obviously, they'll sweep their home games in Oklahoma City did not come true. But in game four, as we know, Kevin Durant went off with 41 points, including I think it was some 17 or so in the fourth quarter alone, outscoring the Spurs by himself. Russell Westbrook deferred to KD, and so it was 2-2. Last night back in San Antonio, which should be obviously friendly ground since the Spurs lost one game. Let me count them again. One. Done. One game in their building this entire regular season. And that was late in the year to the Warriors when they didn't play everybody and didn't play it like it was playoffs, because it wasn't. In their building last night, the Thunder took them down. The fourth quarter, just like it belonged to Durant in Game 4, it belonged to Westbrook in Game 5. And suddenly, the 3-2 lead that I thought would be there, just a little different order, is there for the Thunder, and they can close them out in Oklahoma City, not in San Antonio, but in Oklahoma City in game number 6, which would set up Thunder Warriors, because the Warriors are going to close out Portland, obviously, in game 6, or game 5, beg your pardon. The Thunder Warrior matchup is what is coming, and I'm feeling very, very good about it. What I really like about this is the way those two teams play. If anybody can play Warrior-style basketball with the same athleticism, the same scoring, the same type of get up and down, small, big, it doesn't matter, we'll do whatever you do, the Thunder have that capability. And I'm still hoping somebody knocks off the Warriors before they get to the finals against the Cavs, because I do not feel as confident about the Cavs against the Warriors in a final as I would the Cavs against the Thunder. Two things working there. One, I love Kevin Durant, and I want to see him win a championship someday. So getting to the finals is an opportunity for that to happen. But two, since I love the Cavaliers more and want to see them end the city of Cleveland's drought from all of their franchises out there in championships, I think they'd have a better chance against the Thunder than they do the Warriors. So all of that stuff working as a part of last night's Game 5 Oklahoma City win over San Antonio that I want to talk about. But NBA-wise, that's not top of the mind. Even though I led with it, and as far as the NBA conversation, that's not top of the mind. What is top of the mind is Tracy McGrady. Tracy McGrady, T-Mac, used to be one of the great scorers and, quite frankly, one of the great players in his era in the NBA. Now, his era has been over for a while. His last meaningful season, really, where he played close to a full year was back in 08. So 8 years ago, Tracy McGrady, the last time he played 60 or more games was in 2008.
Actually, check that. No, it was, I just looked him up. Actually, his last significant
the Pistons.
Was with the Pistons.
That's
of
right.
All teams in 2010-11.
But when I said meaningful, I meant meaningful.
Ah, you know, because, that's true. Those were the bad Piston teams between
right.
the end and of that era
and Van
Gundy.
And he was an 8-point-a-game scorer. Yep. And he was an 8-point-a-game in 23 minutes. He was a pieces parts thing then.
Yep.
When I say meaningful, I'm talking about T-Mac, okay?
You're right.
Not the hanger-on, because he also played a year with the Knicks, 24 games for them right before the Pistons, and in Atlanta, you know, 5 points again. I'm talking about the last meaningful T-Mac game, or season, I should say, was 2007-2008 with Houston, and he averaged 21 points, 6 assists, and...
4.5 rebounds.
Four
no,
and
five,
a half rebounds.
5.1, sorry.
Thank you. 5.1, that's right. But back in his heyday, which we can now say was roughly 12 or 13 years ago,
yep.
When he was one of the most dominant scorers and players in the NBA, and I'm talking about 26.8, 7.5 rebounds, 5 assists back in 2000-2001, 25.5 points, 8 rebounds, 5.3 assists in 2002 with Orlando, 32.1 points a game.
To lead the league.
6.5 boards. And still 5.5 assists. I mean, we're talking numbers that are Curry-like. That's what Tracy McGrady did in 2002-03. And I was there firsthand. I was working in Orlando at that time for just for a short while. And I got to see him. He was phenomenal. He followed up that 32.1 with 28, 6, and 5.5. There was a time when T-Mac was one of the top five players in this league. So this guy knows his stuff. When he speaks about the quality or the caliber of the NBA, it's something people should listen to. I give you all of that because of, well, for the most obvious of reasons, that last night Tracy McGrady opened some eyes, and today has opened up a lot of mouths, people criticizing him for his comments about Steph Curry being named the unanimous NBA MVP. This is what Tracy McGrady said that has the entire basketball world on his case today.
This is tough, right? For him to be that first player to get this unanimously, I think it just tells you how watered down our league is.
You think so?
Yeah, seriously, because you think about when MJ played, Shaq. I mean, those guys really played against top-notch competition. More superstars, I think, on more teams than it is in our league today. But it's well-deserved. I mean, because he had a hell of a season. He's breaking records. He's rewriting the record books. So, I mean, my hat is off to him. But I just think that, you know, somebody like LeBron deserve to get at least one vote.
Tracy did.
All right. So he was critical of the fact that Steph became the first player ever to win unanimous MVP. And his explanation for that was that it's kind of a watered-down league. Specifically, he said that, you know, back when MJ was winning his MVPs and he didn't win unanimously, it's because there was a lot better competition in terms of stars in more places. Meaning,
there's some truth to that. Just think of the Dream Team roster.
Hang on a second. I think it's legitimate when he says that, because of the tendency now for stars to do what? To try to team up with one another.
Yep.
LeBron going down there to play with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, rather than back in the day Tracy played in the early 2000s, certainly back in the days Mike starred in the late 80s and in the 1990s, you didn't have these, you know, Michael, I'm going to go play with Larry. Larry, I want to go play with Karl Malone. And Karl Malone, I'm going to go play with Magic Johnson. You know, he did that at the end of his career to try to hang on and get a ring with the Lakers. Didn't work, obviously. But the point being, this is what it is now. LaMarcus Aldridge, free agency, goes and joins Kawhi Leonard. Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Chris Paul, of course, got signed by the Clips in a free agent deal. These players are pooling together in order to form super teams, in order to create super teams. So there's something a little bit less than parity in the NBA. And because there are super teams where the superstars all conglomerate, I think I just used that noun as a verb, where they all congregate is what I mean to say.
There we go.
Because there are super teams, what does that leave, Jim? That leaves a bunch of mediocre teams. And so Steph is playing in an 82-game season, according to T-Mac's logic here. He's playing against watered-down competition most nights. Now, not when he faces one of the quote-unquote super teams, obviously. But you know, night in and night out on a regular basis, there isn't that type of star-caliber player opposing you and your team, making them a threat on a regular basis the way it was back in his time, back in Michael's time, back in Magic and Bird's time. And I think T-Mac, while he's getting killed for suggesting that Steph is less than what he is, which is phenomenal because of the watered-down competition, T-Mac, in my mind, has got a point.
I think he has a point in relation to the concept of watered down. When you think about it from the prism of the super team concept, the uniting your big three. I mean, in trying to rattle off a few teams, you forgot the Boston teams when they get Garnett.
Garnett deliberately went there and Ray Allen joined Paul Pierce to forge the, hey, we can't win it on our own,
right,
leading our own separate franchises, so let's come together and do this.
But at the same time, you know, I don't think the overall, despite the super team creation concept of the recent decade and a half, I don't think it's that watered down. Like, think about the bottom tier teams every year in the playoffs. They were the same kind of mediocre circa 1995. I mean, those Bulls teams of Jordan were constantly sweeping those kind of teams. But I kind of get what he's saying, just in the context of you know, the superstars are on only a handful of teams instead of spread around a little more through the league. That part, he's got a little bit of a point on. In terms of being a little salty because, well, MJ and them never won unanimous MVPs, I think the guy flat out deserves it. I mean, what he did just the other night, I know that's way after voting and it already after the announcement came. What I saw in overtime last night, that's the reason to me that he's the unanimous MVP. Things like that.
Let me, and by the way, I just got a note as you were talking, Jim, from Anthony Fenech, who said Brad Ausmus is addressing the media earlier today with his pregame press conference, his game day press conference. So he's going to be joining us later in the 4 o'clock hour,
okay,
4:30, just an FYI, which is actually fine because I want to continue this conversation after a timeout here about Tracy McGrady and the NBA. I'm glad you and I agree on the issue of super teams forming, and that waters down the competition league-wide. And that is what Tracy McGrady was saying. However, I'm going further than that on his behalf. And I'm going to go ahead and suggest the league is also watered down just in terms of the actual caliber of superstar. That's what I'm talking about, the caliber of player. The best players. In other words, this is going to make me old, get off my lawn guy. Okay? The way a lot of people see Goose Gossage, who was ripping Bautista and other guys. This is not just curmudgeon, you know, guy who you know, watched his basketball in the 80s and said it'll never get better than this and can't accept that things got better. No. I am well-researched, not just emotional. Well-researched, have statistics, have facts, and I'm going to share them. What Tracy McGrady is saying about watered down with respect to super teams is accurate, but it's also accurate in terms of just the caliber of players today. It is not as talented of a league as it was when Mike played. It is not as talented of a league as it was when Tracy McGrady played, again, in his T-Mac heyday of the early 2000s. We're talking 12, 13 years ago when T-Mac was going Curry with 32, 6, and 6. Going LeBron with some of those crazy numbers and shooting percentages, all of those things. The caliber of competition today is weaker. Now, young guys are going to yell at me, and if you're a millennial fan and you say, this is the best it's ever been, they're bigger, faster, and stronger now, fine, let's have the debate. 866-240-1065.
I will disagree, Bob, on one of the things you said.
Not now you won't, because we're getting this bottom of the hour sports center. Disagree on the other side.
I'll open it up then.
At 866-240-1065, want your thoughts on what Tracy McGrady had to say. Is he right? Is he just being bitter? Or does he have a point here? Because I think Jim and I both agree, at least on some level, he has a point. I agree even further. We'll explain, we'll debate, we'll discuss. Coming up next, don't forget, if you can't get on the phone lines with us and you can't wait on hold, you can also tweet to us, Sports Radio 106.5 on Twitter, Sports Radio 106.5, and also on Facebook at 106.5 The Ticket. Your thoughts. We'll get them up and on the radio one way or the other, and we'll have this discussion as we continue the extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Drum solo there to bring us back in, Kush. What's that? What's that the beginning of? Oh, it's Van Halen. Okay, I didn't recognize the thing. I'm sitting there waiting for a marching band or something, actually. Maybe it was the best damn band in the land or something. All right, welcome back as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Our conversation with Anthony Fenech on all things Tigers has been pushed to about 4:30. He's covering the pregame or game day press conference with Brad Ausmus in the manager's office right now, and we'll hear from Anthony at 4:30 instead of 3:35. And then we're also going to talk Indians baseball and more with Matt Lodi from Northeast Ohio Sports Insiders.com. That'll be at 4:05.
And as you just heard, they are up 2-1 right now. It's afternoon action in Houston. Mike Napoli with a solo jack, and Danny Salazar's got it going. He gave up one home run to one of their power hitters, George Springer. But it's 5 1/3, and it's 9 Ks so far for Salazar. So he's got it going on today.
I'll tell you what, his ERA, almost as minuscule as Zimmerman's, as we mentioned. Salazar, 1.93
is where he is now. He's just had a phenomenal start to the season. All right, a couple of things. First of all, before we do anything else, before we go any further, we got to honor the kids, the young kids, the KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. For the girls, we want to say congrats to Liberty Benton Track's Michaela Butler. She broke the 100-meter record at the Clay Eagle Invitational on Friday with a time of 12.02. Liberty Benton on as a team won the meet on the girls' side with 124.5 cumulative points. For the boys, wrestling season is over, but congrats to four area wrestlers named to the Wrestling USA Magazine All-America team. Clay senior Matt Stencil, one of the top 13 members of the magazine's Dream Team, while three others, Perrysburg senior Mario Guillen, Napoleon senior Seth Beard, and Delta senior Jake Spees, named honorable mentions by Wrestling USA Magazine for their All-America edition. All four wrestlers won state championships, of course, back in March. So they are your High School Athletes of the Week. Thanks to KeyBank for honoring the kids. And, oh, by the way, if you have a nomination for one of the KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week, somebody in your school or somebody that you know that deserves recognition, please send their nominations with their names, school, and accomplishments to
athlete at 1065theticket.com.
And we will consider them for honoring on the radio program.
And here's your extra bonus if you take that route. I will give you props on the air for submitting
the nomination.
It. Yep,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, so the actual nominator gets some gets a little on-air love as well.
Exactly. So extra incentive, people.
All right, back to the issue at hand. Before we hear Tracy McGrady once again talk about the unanimous MVP award given yesterday to Steph Curry, which has just gotten a lot of people riled up, a lot of people are angry about that, I want to play somebody else's comments about the MVP going to Steph Curry. This is the guy who finished third, the guy that some people say is still better than Steph Curry. Here's LeBron James on Steph.
You look at Steph's numbers, I mean, he averaged 30, he led the league in steals, he was 90, 50, 40, and they won 73 wins. I mean, you have really any debate over that, really, when it comes to that award.
He said there's no debate about that, really. I know it's hard to hear with the basketballs bouncing in the background. It was, of course, at practice, a little media gathering. And he said, Steph led the league in points and steals. Only, I think that I hear yesterday, the second player to ever do that. I'm going to have to double check that, but I think that was the number. But the accolades are so deep and long for, the list is so long for Steph Curry, it's hard to keep them all straight. But 90-50-40, if you were wondering what he means by that, 90% from the free throw line, 50% or better from the field, and 40% or better from three. He said, and oh, by the way, they won 73 games. yeah, he said there's no doubt about it. Steph deserved the award. So LeBron's got no problem with it. Does he have a problem with him not getting any first-place votes? Does he have a problem with Steph being the first player in history to ever be unanimous in this award? LeBron, back in 2013, was one vote shy of being unanimous. Shaquille O'Neal, back in 2000, was one vote shy of being unanimous. They were the closest. But the honor of first time ever being the unanimous MVP goes to Steph Curry, and former NBA superstar, and I mean that with a capital S. Dude played like Superman. He was a superstar. Tracy McGrady was at one time one of the top three, four, or five best players in the league about 12, 13 years ago. It was a time maybe that was a little better than the time Steph is playing in now. And that's what he said last night on TNT that's got everybody yapping.
This is tough, right? For him to be that first player to get this unanimously, I think it just tells you how watered down our league is.
You think so?
Yeah, seriously, because think about when MJ played, Shaq. I mean, those guys really played against top-notch competition, more superstars, I think, on more teams than it is in our league today.
I'm going to pause that there just to kind of underscore what we talked about last segment. I think that part is very true. First of all, he just
said
more
stars. And I agreed with that.
Just better competition. First of all, better competition. That means the players were better than they are now.
It also
that's
means the superstars
there's going to be a dispute.
Were spread around.
That's where there's going to yes, but that was the other part. That was part B. Part A is just better competition, meaning the players then were better. Steph is competing now against inferior competition comparatively to when MJ played and when Shaq was a star, etc. Then the second thing he said there, of course, was they were spread out on more teams. Now they like to kind of gather and congregate on one roster so that it's easier to win titles. Rather than competing against each other, they team up and compete against a bunch of, what, mediocre teams that don't have superstars on them. So that's what he's saying, and I agree on both counts. Cushlin agrees on one of those counts. Let's continue.
But it's well-deserved. I mean, because he had a hell of a season. He's breaking records. He's rewriting the record book. So, I mean, my hat is off to him. But I just think that, you know, somebody like LeBron deserves to get at least one vote.
Tracy did everything but tell us to get off his lawn. Water down? Come on, man. Like, I understand that there is. I understand your point.
Let's debate about this.
I understand your point. But look, and your point that I actually take to heart the most is imagining what LeBron James is feeling right now. Imagining that he is watching these vote tallies.
He's won four. He's won four.
And if I'm him, I'm thinking, okay, here's yet another log to throw on the media doesn't like me fire.
Okay, forget about that part of it right now. That was from ESPN this morning. Forget about that part of it right now, about the LeBron thing and the media. Let's get to what T-Max said. It's not debatable that the competition was better in previous generations or previous eras of stars, including T-Mac's era in the early 2000s, because, as we said, back then, everybody wanted to beat one another. The first and second and third and fourth best players, let's do it this way. The first teamers on the all-NBA teams, when you first team all-NBA, they all opposed one another and they all wanted to beat one another. None of them said, let's team up and join one another the way they do now, creating kind of a smaller number of quote unquote super teams so that, you know, they each have better chances to win. But most nights, those super teams are playing inferior competition, or as Tracy McGrady said, watered down competition because they don't have superstars on the vast majority of those teams. And that is something that Jim and I agreed upon in the first segment. And Jim, as I understand it, you're going to disagree with the other part, which is that the players were simply better then than they are now, better in T-Mac's heyday and better in the heyday of guys like Mike, Shaq, and others before him. That's you disagree with that.
I slightly do, but it's a little kind of off track, and it's kind of a different angle. I also argue that Tracy McGrady played in the watered-down era, if you will. I still personally mark the demarcation line in this kind of conversation, which can be put into others in the NBA. The demarcation line is Jordan's second retirement. Look how bad the Eastern Conference, for example, has been. It still, in some ways, has not recovered from when Jordan ended up retiring that second time. And it's not even... Think about the other players. Think of your dream team roster for a quick second. You know, at the same time Jordan was retiring for the second time, that was the end of the line for Patrick Ewing, Karl Malone, John Stockton, David Robinson.
Okay, you're getting into some strange thing here with demarcation that I want to avoid. I just want to talk about players, the best players then that Tracy was talking about versus the best players today. And this is the research that I did before the show today to hit this, okay? In the years that we described Tracy McGrady having his best seasons, and remember, at that time, he was just unbleeping believable. From 2000, pretty much through 2007, I would say, with the real high water marks, because, you know, being in 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, in those years, where he was averaging anywhere between 26, 30, and 32 points a game, grabbing anywhere between 6 and 7.5 rebounds a game, and passing out 6 to 7.5 assists a game. Crazy, crazy good numbers, dominant numbers for those Orlando teams. In that time period, let's look at the all-NBA players then and compare them to today. Then we're going to go back because T-Mac made a point in his commentary that is drawing all of this attention to MJ's days, and we're going to compare the players of those eras to the superstar players of today. And somebody is going to have to tell me how Tracy McGrady is so far off, and so how insulting he is to say the league is watered down now in terms of the level of competition compared to back when MJ played. Because all I will do, and I can sit here and say the names if I want, from the late 1980s to the early 1990s and mid-1990s, and say the names of Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Moses Malone, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, Chris Mullin. I could sit here and recite the Dream Team roster to you from the 1990s and again point out to you that with the exception of Stockton and Malone, who both were drafted by their team and who did not team up to form a super team through free agency, with the exception of those two guys, all of these guys played on different teams. With the exception, again, though, of Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, who were drafted on the same team. They also did not team up to do this. Hakeem Olajuwon, John Stockton, whose name I already mentioned. We are talking, now that was in the Jordan heyday, when he was winning MVPs. And he was winning non-unanimous MVPs during those times. Why? Because of the names that I just mentioned that he was competing with. Larry Bird, three times MVP, never unanimous. Why? Because of the names that we're talking about right now. Moving into the 2002, 2003, 2004 times, we're talking in the early 2000s, the day of Shaquille O'Neal. We're talking about the future Hall of Famer, Jason Kidd. We're talking about five-time champion Tim Duncan. We're talking about first ballot Hall of Famer Kevin Garnett. And we're talking heyday. Just inducted into the Hall of Fame, Allen Iverson. Obviously, all of this coincides with the career and the heyday of the great all-timer that is Kobe Bryant, whose name hasn't even been mentioned yet, along with all of these. The heyday and prime of Dirk Nowitzki, who is, of course, at the tail end in today's NBA and for the last few of today's NBA years. Now, I want to take that to last year's first-team All-NBA and second-team All-NBA. LeBron James, obviously, all-timer. He would fit right in with those other guys that we just mentioned. But Anthony Davis is your first team All-NBA forward last year, talking about 2014-15. Your center is Mark Gasol. Do you really want to even sit here and have a conversation about Mark Gasol when we have names like David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaquille O'Neal in those positions and the times we are talking about?
I will do the duty of pointing out that the all-NBA teams still have a separate spot for center where All-Star does not. We've had that conversation
before.
Right, and
that's why I'm using the all-NBA teams. So that's an important note.
Right. Right, and that's a good way to do it, too.
DeMarcus Cousins was the second-teamer. James Harden. James Harden, who actually got MVP votes last year for being a one-dimensional gunner. Nowhere near what Jason Kidd, what Allen Iverson, who was not just a one-dimensional gunner, although he was a gunner, obviously, but by far a better player and a better scorer. Nowhere near what the other guys that I just mentioned were in the backcourt. And then, of course, Steph himself. You know, backups or second and third team All-NBA guys from a year ago. LaMarcus Aldridge. Where is he in a conversation with Karl freaking Malone as a power forward? Where is he in a conversation with even Tim Duncan, the man who he has replaced now in San Antonio at that position? Where is he compared to Charles Barkley? Give me a break. Pau Gasol. Are you kidding? Pau Gasol would be the 12th man on a dream team type of thing if he even made such a team back then. He's one of the top two or three forwards in the game in last year's 2014-15 All-NBA teams, second teamer at forward. Russell Westbrook, whose athleticism is off the charts, indeed, no question. But you know what? Put him up against the names that I just mentioned, who are the point guards of the of yesteryear. Put his name up there, up with Magic Johnson, and see how he fares. Or Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd defensively would pick him apart, and expose and exploit his over the top athleticism that sometimes gets him in trouble because he tries to do too. He's like that. Russell Westbrook is like that quarterback with a cannon arm, it's a great thing to have, obviously, but it's so good that you think you can do anything with it, and you try to force the ball through windows, he just can't. That's kind of Russell when he makes his mistakes. Chris Paul. Chris Paul is more of a quintessential all-time point guard, and I think he probably does fit in with some of the others. And then, of course, the third team last year, Blake Griffin, even Tim Duncan at his age, DeAndre Jordan, Klay Thompson, and Kyrie. None of those guys, I'm sorry, none of today's superstars, with the exception of Kevin Durant, who was hurt last year, so he wasn't in that. He was would be this year, of course. You know, LeBron and KD and Steph himself, Dwayne Wade, who's still playing, but not at the same level he was in his heyday, which was going back, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. He came in, of course, into the league with LeBron. I'm trying to think of other guys today that you could say even remotely compare to the all-timers from those Dream Team eras that I just ran down. The bottom line is Tracy McGrady got a whole bunch of people in today's NBA angry for daring to point out truth that no one wants to admit. The game has changed. The game has changed, and it has changed not necessarily for the better. The game has become a run-and-gun, three-point jacking league with its champion, its defending champion, jacking the most of them, making the most of them, but being a run-and-gun, three-point jacking player and team does not make you as good as the complete all-around players that I just listed from the early 2000s, from the 1990s, from the 1980s, and dare I go back into the 1970s, I'd put a whole bunch of young people to sleep with the names I would throw at them. But one of which would be, of course, Julius Erving, who didn't even make the conversation, for God's sake, and I should smack myself for that. None, well, not none, a small handful of today's NBA superstars could be counted in at the level of those superstars I just ran down. It is a watered-down league. Tracy McGrady is right in every facet of what he said, and I'm sorry if that hurts young millennial generation minds, or feelings, I should say. I'm sorry if that makes it sound like I'm trying to rain on Steph Curry's parade. As you know from yesterday's show, Jim Kushlin, mm-hmm. I praised him for 20 solid minutes about how legendary his fourth quarter and overtime performances were in game four against the Blazers. I said his stuff was all-time stuff.
Yeah.
And that if Michael had done what he did, my God, what people would be saying. And I meant it. So I am not a hater. I am an absolute fan of what he has done and the player he has become. But I am also a realist, and I am willing to say, as unpopular as it might have been for T-Mac, and as unpopular as it might be for me to agree and double down on it, I'm going to say it again. Tracy McGrady is right. The league is weaker today in terms of overall superstar players and the spread of those players league-wide due to the formation of super teams because they're too cowardly to take one another on every single night.
Real quick,
And
don't misunderstand. I'm agreeing in principle with both of those points. I'm actually just throwing out the argument that the way I look at it, Jordan's second retirement is the line where this conversation begins. That's all I'm trying to say. That's when the league started to change. That's when the star power took its different course. That's when the super team concept started to be brought up. And that's all I'm arguing and trying. Yes, I guess that is the slight salt that I'm throwing on Trace McGrady. When he did those things, those numbers you read off earlier, that was in that post-Jordan concept era, though. That's all I'm saying. I agree with that principle. I think the players were overall better, and the key was they were spread out more than they are today. And I'm just trying to throw out that
because I remember watching these things when I was growing up in the late 80s, early 90s thing. Jim, that super team thing, though, too, and this is actually, because I'm fair and I'm honest, and I'm always going to be honest, this would be a mark against my argument that two of those guys that I mentioned from the previous era before all this started actually kind of started the super team thing. And that is when Shaquille O'Neal left Orlando.
Yep.
Realized he couldn't carry a team to a championship.
That's
couldn't
a good
do it
point.
With Penny Hardaway. Got swept by Hakeem Olajuwon and the Rockets in the finals.
That was 95.
And went to LA to play with Kobe.
Yep.
And then he and Kobe did their thing. That was kind of one of the very first ones. So
I'm just
I don't want
to
say it's only the modern
always
players who have done this
right
to the league. It has happened with a couple of those that I just mentioned.
I can agree with that.
But in terms of overall star power, caliber and quality of the best players then and in the 90s and in the 80s compared to today, I'm sorry, today's players flat out do not measure up. We'll take arguments of discussion on this matter right after this at 866-240-1065 on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
off glass. Adams off the double. What a shot by Steven Adams going to the reverse. Leonard chased by Westbrook. Leonard on the rim. Time running down, and Westbrook with a deep, deep three-pointer.
How do you want it? That's what Westbrook's asked.
San Antonio by five. Westbrook. Oklahoma City up by a point. Very similar to what took place in game two. Waiters gets it in this time. Westbrook to the bucket. He scores and a foul with 6.3 to go. The Spurs felt there should have been a travel.
Two plays in which Westbrook kept going. One when he thought it was a shot clock violation and he kept playing. And this is who you need to be, Westbrook. Not who the critics want you to be. Not who some fans want you to be. Be the best Westbrook that you can be, getting the and one late in the game in San Antonio.
We got stops, and Russ was a maniac tonight, you know, keeping us in it. He hit a big three and got a big driving layup. We didn't panic late in the game. And we got, like I said, we got stops. You know, it was a good win for us.
Coach drawed up a good play. We executed very well towards the end of the game. And once they didn't foul, I just tried to sit in attack mode and get to the basket and finish.
That's why they call it a game. Things happen. It's not like we got beat by 30. The game went down to the wire. I didn't think anything got away from us. We made mistakes, but if one team didn't make any mistakes, the score would be 150-10. You got to make shots down the stretch. We lost a couple of boards there at the end of the fourth quarter, just like last game.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Boy, I'll tell you what, something really, really interesting must be going on for me not to be talking about the Spurs and the Thunder series, which is just turned in a phenomenal way. And again, I said it at the start of that series. I'll say it again now. I expected it to go seven. I expected it to be tremendously entertaining for all basketball fans. And I expected to be very happy and very sad when it was over because I like both teams. And I want to see one win. I don't want to see the other one lose, but you can only get one of the two. And back on Friday, when it was still 1-1 going into Game 3, I predicted that the Thunder would indeed upset the Spurs and win this series and go on to face the Warriors in the Western Conference Final. That is much more likely now, as they have a chance to close it out at Oak City tomorrow. So really just a spectacular series, and we're not even talking about it. Why? As we begin hour number two of the extravaganza, because of Tracy Bleeping McGrady. You remember T-Mac, don't you? He was tremendous in his day, one of the top 3 to 5 players in the NBA in 2000, 2001, 2003, 2004, maybe as far as 5. But that was his heyday. His heyday was 11, 12, 13 years ago. And it's a different league now. There is no question about that. And perhaps that's why he said what he said last night with respect to Steph Curry winning the MVP for the first time in NBA history as a unanimous selection.
This is tough, right? For him to be that first player to get this unanimously, I think it just tells you how watered down our league is.
You think so?
Yeah, seriously, because you think about when MJ played, Shaq. I mean, those guys really played against top-notch competition, more superstars, I think, on more teams than it is in our league today. But it's well-deserved, I mean, because he had a hell of a season. He's breaking records. He's rewriting the record books. So, I mean, my hat is off to him. But I just think that, you know, somebody like LeBron deserved to get at least one vote.
So he is being called, you know, the latest reincarnation of the old get-off-my-lawn guy, just like Goose Gossage in baseball, just like Oscar Robertson, who talked about Curry being a great shooter but not the greatest. It's Isaiah Thomas, Detroit's own bad boy and two-time champion, Isaiah Thomas, kind of saying, you know what, if he had to play against the defense that I had to play against, with the hand-checking and the physicality they allowed then that they don't allow today, he couldn't have done it, not at least to the level he is now. All those guys have been called just the old curmudgeons who don't understand and appreciate today's modern-day player. And you know what? Fine. But Tracy McGrady, if what he said last night on TNT is spot on. And I laid out my reasons last segment as to why. Let's hear your thoughts on it right now. Tony is first in Perrysburg. Tony, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How you doing, Tony?
Not too bad, not too bad at all. You know what? They're right. They are old guys who are living in the past, but it doesn't make them wrong. T-Mac is absolutely right. The league is watered down to a point where I can't watch a regular season game anymore. I've gotten to the point where I'm into the playoffs a little bit now, but I came up in the 80s. I remember the Boston and Detroit feuds. mean, these guys hated each other. These guys did not like each other at all when it comes to the basketball court. Now the NBA is a love fest where everybody's buddies and wants to get together and play together. And it does make five or six teams really good teams, but the rest of the league's pretty much a joke.
And that was the point. You know, the two-pronged approach there from Tracy McGrady was that, one, the players were just better. It was much better competition is the way he said it. And then he said more superstars on more teams, meaning they were spread out and they weren't all teaming up to create super teams. And I'm with you. Look, I do sports for a living, and there are a lot of regular season games that I can't watch from start to finish because they are indeed watered down. The other team doesn't have a star. Look, at the greatest example of it was this just completed playoff series between the Cavaliers and the Hawks. There's no superstar on the Hawks. There's no superstar there. There's no superstar on the Grizzlies, even if Marc Gasol and Mike Conley are both healthy. They're good players. They may be all-stars, but they're not game changers, or team carriers. And that's the straight-up fact with most teams, that there aren't enough stars to go around the way they were back in days when nobody could be a unanimous MVP, like T-Mac said.
I'm a huge Boston Celtics fan. I could tolerate watching one game of that series, and that was it.
Yeah.
Because it is such a watered-down game. Not only that, but...
The team with the superstar or stars is going to have a huge advantage most nights in the NBA, which is what leads to, again, what T-Mac said, you know, a guy like Steph being able just to, you know, gallivant through a regular season in which he very rarely is tested because it is a mediocre, the vast majority of the teams are mediocre, parity-ridden, if you will, with the exception of that handful of super teams that have assembled through free agency.
If you think about it, the fact that Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant never was in that unanimous nominee,
kind of
makes it just sound odd. I think most people agree those are the two greatest players, at least in my era, that I've ever seen play.
And certainly Mike would say that. It would be a really good conversation about whether or not Kobe is the other greatest player ever. But your point is well taken. Some might say LeBron after Michael or Magic would be.
Maybe, but we'll wait until LeBron's done.
No, but I mean in terms of at least in a regular season getting an MVP unanimously. LeBron came close 3 years ago. He was one vote shy 3 years ago, and then Shaq was one vote away from being a unanimous MVP back in 2000.
I think what gets lost in a lot of this, though, too, are the rule changes that have taken place over the years. I think Zeke hit the nail on the head that if people were allowed to defend Steph Curry the way they were allowed to back in the 80s,
sure.
I can't imagine he would be even close to the numbers he's got. And I'm not taking anything away from the guy.
I know. And that's the thing. Whenever you say these things that are true, Tony, I got to run, my friend. Thanks for the call. I got to get some other people on the radio. But listen, whenever you or anybody says what you're saying right now, you're called a hater. You're called the old bitter guy who doesn't understand the game if you don't think Steph could play in any era. I'm not saying he couldn't play in any era. I'm not saying he couldn't be very, very, very good, if not great, in other eras. But to be as dominant with the numbers and the performance he is putting up today, to expect that he would do the same thing, not even take a little bit of a hit in terms of his numbers, back in the days when you had hand checking and you had physicality that threw everybody off their game. For God's sake, I mean, Michael Jordan was a ping pong ball when he played the Pistons, because when they employed the Jordan rules, if you will, you know, the guys were allowed to be back. Zeke, Isaiah Thomas, one of the greatest offensive players I've ever seen for a guy under 6'3", and Zeke was like 6 foot or 6'1", right? Isaiah Thomas, I mean, imagine if he played today, the handle he had, the ability he had, if he played under the same rules Steph. I'm just saying that Steph is fortunate to be playing at a time where his skills can be maximized by the way the game has changed and evolved in terms of how it's called. It is not wrong to say that that might be different if he played in a different era. It's not disparaging his greatness. I praise his exploits on an almost daily basis on this show throughout the season, whenever he would have another one of his ridiculous point or games and point totals and assist totals and rebounds. And how does this 6'3", 190-pound cat, you know, getting 6 or 7 rebounds a game? How can that be? And so I'm praising him all the time. But the answer to that question might be a legitimate answer. Maybe it's because he's allowed to run untouched through a defense, no matter who's shooting the ball, and go in and get rebounds, because nobody's allowed to bang him, shoulder him, knock him, elbow him, and do the things that other guards who are 6'3 and 190 would never have thought about going down the middle against because of that. So, you know, just being real here, the talent level was higher than T-Mac is right, and the super team fact cannot be ignored. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Woodville. Mike, you're on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, thanks for being patient, my friend. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I think this is an interesting conversation, but I think it comes down to another part that may have been glossed over a little bit.
What part is that?
We don't have any truly great centers now. I mean, you can look in the any era prior to this era, mm-hmm. whether you're looking at Shaq or, you know, Tim Duncan, who's a relic in this era.
Yeah.
Not really a relevant player. He plays 15 minutes a game or 18 minutes a game, but, I mean, you look
and
at
that was
the
still
era,
third team All-NBA last year, by the way, in 2014, 2015. He was still, at the age of 38 or 9 or whatever he is, third team All-NBA, playing that old-school back-to-the-basket game that he still plays. Go ahead.
Sure. But, I mean, you look at the eras prior. I mean, let's say you look at the 80s and 90s. You can go to Hakeem, you know, Ewing. You can go through any number of very good to great centers.
Absolutely.
Right now, our era, because of the way that physicality is kind of been handcuffed, I mean, nobody really wants to play deep in the pivot because they get into foul trouble. They get off the court. And even the centers we have that are good, let's just say good right now, can't hit a free throw to save their life, i.e. Drummond or Howard or whomever, or Jordan with the Clippers. So we're looking at
the other reason, though, that there are no great centers anymore is the guys that would be centers today, who would have been centers 25, 30 years ago in the era that you're talking about, are no longer brought up, literally from the age of being kids, as centers, because you know, now everybody, even if you're 6'11 like Kevin Durant, everybody wants to face the basket and shoot threes. Everybody. You look at some of the, you know, Anthony Davis, another 6'10, 6'11 forward who plays, you know, facing the basket. Even the tallest kids now aren't told to go down to the post and post up on the block in young AAU levels. Everybody is now a face-up, you know, kind of a triple threat scoring type of player. Nobody wants to even coach kids to be centers anymore. That's why the center position has died. They just pretty much gave up on it, and now even big guys who used to be rebounders with their back to the basket are a very, very, very rare breed.
Well, and that's, you're asking how a guy like Westbrook can get 8 rebounds a game. I mean, when you're taking those 6'10 and above guys and throwing them out of the wing, and they're the guys making the shot on the three-point line or mm-hmm. a little bit inside of it and stuff.
And they're all spread around the perimeter now, and there's no trees to battle amongst to get in there and get those.
Not to mention, guys, with the long-range shots, by sheer physics, you usually get longer rebounds.
Yep.
Exactly.
That's a great point, too. That is a very good point. You do. And, and with this many threes being taken, the ball's coming off the rim hot, and it's coming into the hands, not of the you know, the 6'9", 6'10", bigs underneath who are not modern-day centers, but they're still bigger, and into the hands of the smaller guys on the perimeter.
And you look at the analytics saying that this long-range two is no longer a viable shot, which I agree with. But, I mean, now it's coming down to all these three-point shots being attempted. Longer rebounds are being made, as Jim made a great point on. And really, you're looking at a game that's become much more spaced due to them handcuffing the physicality. You've made a game that's either you're going to be inside the, 10 feet or so trying a shot, or you're going to be outside the three-point line making a shot. I mean, we look at each era of baseball, for instance, based on, you know, the last era we had was the PED era, where all these guys are hitting the ball out of the park and everything else. Each era has got its own thing that makes it unique.
Sure.
Maybe our last era was unique because we had an overabundance of superstars at that point in time. Or maybe we're just looking back with rose-colored glasses.
No, I don't think so, because I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best to pay honor and tribute to and respect and tribute to the great players of today and the style of today and everything else. I'm trying very hard not to be rose-colored glasses. My younger years were my best years, so therefore it was everything else that was the best, too, players and this and that and the other thing. I will fully acknowledge greatness when I see greatness. You know, my favorite teams were from the 70s and 80s in the NFL, too. Does that mean I think all of those players were better than Tom Brady and Peyton Manning today and and Adrian Peterson and so on? No. I'm not there. But in the NBA, the game has changed. The athletes have changed. And to me, Tracy McGrady's commentary about it being watered down is flat-out factual, and it's very hard to prove otherwise.
I think that you are correct on that. Like I said, I'm playing kind of a devil's advocate trying to...
I got you. I respect that. I'm glad you are. That's what makes great discussions great.
I agree with your statement, but at the same time, I'm trying to represent the other side a little bit.
Yeah,
because
you're doing a great job of it, my friend. I appreciate the call. I got to run, though, Mike. Thank you so much.
Let me get to Bowling Green.
I'm going to go to Bowling Green next and talk to Troy, see what he thinks about all this. T-Mac says it's a watered-down league, and the reason why Michael never won a unanimous MVP, for example, is because there were better players spread out all over better teams and more competition for MVP awards, and now Steph is playing against watered-down competition. What do you think?
I don't think the competition's watered down. I think that the skill set might even be better. It's the pace of play and the physicality is different. Their skill level, I mean, nobody handles the ball like Steph handles the ball or shoots the ball like that. I'm friends with a guy that played overseas, and we just talked about how, if you look in the 90s, that there weren't that many great shooters, you know, people that just sat there and knocked down shots, or even from the distance, that Steph shoots some of those shots. He's 4 or 5 feet behind the three. Who even took those shots 20 years ago?
Yeah, that's exactly it. If you had a guy starting to take shots like that from there, he's going to find himself on the bench real fast, because the percentage obviously is such a small shooting percentage, or such a low percentage shot to make. You know, back then in the 90s, we still had big men. We still had a game that was built on the perimeter shot opens things up to get the ball down low, to feed it to our bigs, to get our cutters and our slashers.
And don't forget mid-range jumpers.
Which, again, used to be a part of the game, too, which are not anymore. If you're taking a jumper now and it's not for three, it's like, what's the point? Why didn't you take 2 steps backwards and get an extra point for it if you're going to shoot from out there? But back then in the 90s, you had centers. In the 80s and 90s, you had bigs. And you're right. I don't know if it was never as great a shooter back then, but nobody was ever going to find out. Nobody was going to shoot 13 threes a game and find out if he could make 6 of them, 7 of them, and make himself a 45, 50% shooter from three and do what Steph is doing, because it wouldn't have been allowed.
And I agree with that. And it goes all the way back to, you know, the other thing is in the 90s, people were getting the crap beat out of them in the post. So if I'm a kid, I'm gonna step out there and shoot threes versus go in the post and grind it, work on all my footwork and all that, you know, lack of a better term, the girls don't pay attention to the guy down low. They want to watch threes be made. And that's what we've done.
I can tell you from experience, being a kid, you know, being the, you know, one of the tallest kids in my class, you know, I'm a 6'3" guy. So as a kid, what did I play? I was a post. I was a center or a four. I had another guy on my junior high teams, it was also 6'3", and maybe 6'1" in junior high, but you get the point. And we were the posts. And you're right. We'd beat the crap out. Every team had guys like us, and we'd beat each other up in there, and you'd get to a point where you're like, I'm going outside the key. Give me the ball on the baseline, and I'm taking jumpers from the baseline. And then, hey, I made it. Then you start wanting to do it more. Yeah, it's hard to play that position down there, and nobody really likes doing it. And that's why, as the evolution of athlete and the game have coincided over the last 30 years or so, most of these bigs aren't even bothering to go down there. It's just, I'm starting out here. Give me the ball. I want to face up and shoot jump shots. And that's where the league is right now.
Well, and it goes back to the, you know, take my shot at the AAU programs, is those kids are not asked to go down there and do it, because a path of least resistance is step out and show off and do whatever I got to do, you know. And then as a high school coach, there's not enough time to teach, you know, post moves during the summer, and kids would just get bored with it.
Agreed. That is very, very true. And I can tell you that, again, I've got a son who's in seventh grade. He's not the tallest kid. He was as tall as I was at the same age, but he's one of the taller kids on the team. And sometimes I say, hey, dude, you know, to my kid, I say, hey, you get a smaller guy on you, man. You got to get down on the block. and I'll tell him. And then he'll go because I tell him, you know, you got a great advantage there if you're a head taller than whoever's guarding you in a matchup. And he'll go down there and he'll get the ball down there and he won't know what to do with it. I got to teach the kid some post moves. I'll try to teach him some post moves, and it is hard. He's never seen them before. No one's ever worked with him on it before, none of the coaches he's had. So I'm trying to teach him moves that are antiques. You know, they're antiquated in today's young basketball player, trying to teach kids moves on the post. And almost immediately after I walk away, after showing him these moves, it's back out and facing the basket, shooting straight-up jump shots. It's just yep. the nature of the evolution, or if you will, if you're a cynic the way I am apparently in this regard, it's the de-evolution of the game.
All right. Yeah, I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate taking my call.
You got it, brother. Thanks for the call, Troy. Always good to hear from you. Good stuff today on the phones. Let's keep it going. Although on the other side of our bottom of the hour timeout, which we're going to take here in a minute, we do have Anthony Fenech waiting. Anthony Fenech is, of course, the Tigers beat writer. Tigers and Nationals, game three of their set. The rubber match is going to start at, what, 7 or 7:30, Jim?
It is a little after 7, 6:40 at pregame time.
One of those all kind of cool type of events tonight is Max Scherzer, the former Tiger, facing Miguel Cabrera for the first time, and Jordan Zimmermann, the former Nat with the Tigers, facing Bryce Harper for the first time. Very cool game tonight. We're going to talk Tigers with Fennec coming up here in a bit. By the way, speaking of baseball, also, I've got Mud Hens tickets for you. If you'd like to go see the Mud Hens and the Durham Bulls on Wednesday the 24th, so 2 weeks from today, I guess that would be, at 6:30 down at Fifth Third, we've got a pair of tickets for you. If you'd like to be the 10th caller now, 866-240-1065, we'll hook you up with those Mud Hens tickets. This conversation, by the way, does not have to end just because we're going to start talking baseball. That's what Twitter is for, and we enjoy it. Seriously, get on board. Follow us online on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5, and give us your thoughts on what Tracy McGrady said. Is he right, or was he just completely being old dude who doesn't respect today's players when he said that this is a watered-down league, and Steph getting the MVP is just an example of there's not enough competition out there the way there was when Mike was winning his, Bird, Shaq, and other guys who were never unanimous MVPs. We'll continue that chat on Twitter long after the show ends at 5 o'clock and drive time comes your way. All right, let's get a timeout now, though. Bottom of the hour, Sports Center. Talk with Fennec on the other side right here on ESPN 106.5.
It. Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Yeah, I'm just throwing a few worms into the Twitter water, by the way, right now, in case you don't know this. I really want you to follow us on Twitter. We're really, really kind of marrying our on-air product with our social media presence as well. Don't forget the podcast as well on our webpage, which is 1065theticket.com, so that you can listen to the show anytime, whether you miss it live and you just want to hear what we talked about, or if there was a specific guest that you wanted to hear. Any show that you miss, you can list by downloading from our podcast page at 1065theticket.com.
I will get today's podcast and today's show up as soon as I physically can do it after the show.
I appreciate that. And I know you're going to be very busy, by the way, because Jim Cushlin is going to be filling in for Mike Miller today on Drive Time and on the hockey show as well. So Cush has got a busy night in front of him. So my point to all of that was follow us on Twitter. Seriously, engage in the conversation. I enjoy it. It's Sports Radio 106.5. That's where I do all of my sports tweeting from. If you look for me on Twitter personally for Bob France, you're going to find a whole bunch of politics and stuff you may hate. So don't even bother. Don't even bother. I always tell my sports fans, stay away from my politics page. And I tell my politics fans, stay away from my sports page. I live dual lives. I do. I live two different existences, and I try not to let the two cross over because I don't want somebody who likes when I talk sports getting turned off by a political view they don't like. And I don't like my political fans who really love when I talk politics getting turned off by something they find no interest in whatsoever. Like my sports takes, so I try to keep the two separate. I tweet sports strictly from Sports Radio 106.5. All right, so make sure you follow us there. The worms I just threw in the water, like I said, I want to bait you a little bit, not for the point of any negative reasons really, but just because I love this conversation that we're going to have to end soon when we start talking baseball with Fennec in a moment. I just tweeted twice about this issue. Is @RealTMac right? Is @StephenCurry30's first the first unanimous MVP because the NBA is watered down? less talent than MJ days in the league. Followed up with T-Max Wright. Very few 2016 NBA stars could have dominated in the 80s and 90s NBA. Stars back then challenged each other, too, instead of teaming up, which is the other part that Tracy McGrady said that I think is very, very well taken, and I think indisputable, Kush, when you look at it. Again, in a billion years, when Magic Johnson came out of Michigan State in 1980 as a rookie in the NBA, and Larry Bird came out of Indiana State to the Celtics, and those two started just pounding each other in the NBA Finals year after year. Never once did ever either one of them consider, man, I think I'd like to play with that guy. Then imagine what we do to the league. No, it was let's fight. Whoever comes out on top comes out on top. Along comes Michael Jordan in 1984. And, yeah, let me into this fight. I don't want to go play with those guys. I want to beat those guys. Isaiah Thomas, Mark Aguirre, the bad boys, they didn't want to go and play with Michael Jordan, you know. I can't, or Michael Jordan didn't want to come and play with the Pistons either. They wanted to beat one another. Today it's, hey man, I can't seem to win on my own. Let's team up. Let's bring all the superstars to just a small handful of teams, a bunch of super teams, and play a bunch of watered down garbage the rest of the season and the rest of the NBA schedule. Tracy McGrady is right. Let's have that chat online on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5. On the air, though, we want to shift the chat and the conversation to baseball. As promised, our good friend Anthony Fenech from the Detroit Free Press, who's been very busy covering manager Brad Ausmus and doing the rest of his pregame duties as the Tigers and the Nationals get set to have the rubber match tonight of their three-game set, with Jordan Zimmerman and Matt Scherzer facing their old teams tonight. And Tony joins us now right here on the ticket. Hey, what's up, Anthony? How you doing?
Bob, Robert, how you doing?
Good, brother. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Before we get into the very, very cool matchup of Max Scherzer facing the Tigers for the first time and getting his first chance to pitch to Miguel Cabrera. By the way, that is accurate, right? Jim and I were kicking that around. He's never faced Cabrera.
No, he faced him twice in Arizona back in 2008.
Oh, he did, in some interleague crossover then. Okay. I didn't realize if they had done it or not, but obviously certainly not since they've been teammates. And Jordan Zimmerman, I think I'm safe to say, has never pitched to Bryce Harper before.
That would be accurate.
That's very cool stuff there with those two top quality pitchers, huge free agent signings facing their old teams tonight. Before we get into that, though, let's go back to last night. Big sigh of relief from Brad Ausmus, who is, I think we talked about this last week, you know, he's feeling the heat. You know, he's in the crosshairs. Pick your metaphor here. It all applies as the Tigers go on losing streaks like the seven-gamer they finally broke out of last night. Big sigh of relief from him after they took down the Nats.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It wasn't easy. I mean, they really benefited from that blown call at second base. I mean, looking at the play, I mean, I think they blew the call. But, I mean, also the first year slide rule is a little bit ambiguous in terms of, like, not very clear, because, you know, the recently, I guess, umpires have been told to be a little bit more, have a little bit more discretion with in terms of, did the second baseman or shortstop, were they affected by the double play? And on that play, they really weren't. But I think they benefited from that. And then, obviously, in the ninth inning, look at the Nationals, were about to tie the game with Francisco Rodriguez out there. He had to go through, you know, Ryan Zimmerman and Daniel Murphy with the guy in second base. So it was not easy, but they got a win. Hopefully for that, on their part, they can kind of start getting on a roll, because that's the one thing that's really been surprising me about this team is that they haven't been able to get in a roll. I mean, they're always up and down. It's going to be tough tonight against Max Scherzer, but it's a good matchup, like you said.
Yeah, let's go back to that call, though, because I thought it was really interesting. And when I read your article this afternoon, of course, I always try to read your stuff whenever we can, but certainly on days in which you're coming on the program to see what you got. And you called it a blown call right there in the article, which I thought was really interesting, because later you quote Ausmus. Actually, you don't quote him. You said that Ausmus noted that he did not actually impact the attempt to turn the double play there, and that Ghost, by not impacting it or stopping the double play from being turned there, really kind of made it the right call. That it was that it was right to say there is no interference or it didn't violate the new slide rule. So I thought it was interesting. We're calling it blown, but Ausmus kind of correctly saying, well, he didn't really, according to the way the rule is written, he didn't really violate it.
Yeah, and I was really unaware that they had kind of opened it up for more interpretation. I was just kind of going by what the rule book said, which was, you know, a bona fide slide is, you know, directly into the base, or you got to have a foot or an arm, you know, extending, make some kind of attempt. Well, Ghost didn't make any attempt to the base. So that, to me, was where they kind of erred on the call. I was surprised it was upheld, but obviously, like I said, this is kind of like a first-year rule, and it's still getting, I guess, modified as it goes on.
Yeah, and it's a terrible rule, too. I mean, we talked about this some, the opening weekend. I can't remember exactly what the situation was, but it happened on opening weekend. There was a play that impacted a game big time, and we talked about this new rule, and I think it's terrible, but I don't matter because I don't play. Any of the guys you talk to, have they kind of formed an opinion about this rule yet, whether it's after last night or just in general about this new slide rule?
I think most of the players I've talked to are just happy that there's some kind of a uniform rule to go by, because in years past it was so, you know, up to the umpire's interpretation, and there's so many different umpires, and on a day-to-day basis you don't know how each umpire is going to call it. So I think the players are relieved that there's actually something that they can go by. But again, it's a work in progress, and I think it'll get better, you know, next year, the year after that. But right now it's just, like I said, it's a work in progress.
Yeah, and I guess I get all that. I go back, and I don't know how you feel about it, Anthony. We talked a little bit about this, to the reason why this came into play. It was such a strange, fluky thing that happened in the playoffs. And in fact, it's so fluky, I can't remember the guy's name now. Who had his leg broken in that play last year in the playoffs that caused this whole whirl? It's just so unnecessary, because they've been sliding that way for eons, since really the beginning of time when it comes to baseball. And very, very few injuries have ever resulted for them to make such a drastic decision like this, to now institute this rule. Then we got to stop the game and look at the replay and decide what we think his intent was and whether or not he could have reached the base if he had stuck his arm out and all that stuff. I just wonder if the players are like, you know what, stop fixing what isn't broken. The game of baseball has always been around the way that it is. Please leave it alone and let's just play the game.
Yeah, I'm sure some are. That's a bad answer, but yeah, I'm sure some are. Just the ones that I talked to, they just like the uniformity of it. Is that a word, uniformity?
Yeah, of course it is. And I see it. I get it. I would want it to be too. I want it to be a
part of the I agree with you. And that was something that Brad Austin said before the game today, is that, mm-hmm. you know, that was something that they had to stress in spring training, was that, you know, you guys have been trained to, you know, take out the second baseman or shortstop by double plays throughout your whole career. Like, it's going to be like a work in progress, and it's going to be an adjustment. There's going to be an adjustment period. Like he said after the game, he told Anthony Ghost, don't ever slide that like that again. So,
well, that's
it. It'll clear up, I think, more as time goes on, but I don't like the rule either.
Yeah, eventually everything is adjusted to, no matter how bad a rule might be. Eventually you adjust to it, and you just got to deal with it, so there it is. All right, let's get back to the matchup tonight, because this is very cool. You had three different pieces that I read a little bit of today on the Free Press. We're talking with Anthony Fenech. Make sure that you check him out online at Detroit Free Press and on Twitter as well. Scherzer wants to measure up against a Cabrera, and that's why I had originally thought they hadn't faced each other. But to atone for fantasy football, what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, Max was always the leader of all the fantasy football, leagues, the Tigers do. He did the bracket pool, stuff like that. He was really the commissioner behind those leagues. And in 2012, Cabrera won the fantasy football league. And kind of what Max said was that, you know, it'd mean a little bit more if you didn't have an assistant GM. Apparently Miguel's got an assistant GM that drafts with him. He doesn't do much of the drafting, but still he won the league.
Is it another player?
That, huh?
Is it another player? Cabrera's assistant GM who teams up with him?
I don't know. I have to get on my investigative work about that. But I would guess it's probably his boy Frank. His boy Frank's always around. I bet you his boy Frank.
It's just fun stuff seeing kind of behind, you know, behind the scenes, inside baseball, as it were, seeing what these guys are like, when they're on their own. From a competitive standpoint now, Scherzer, and I do see where you mentioned in the bottom of the article that he did face Cabrera twice back in 08, one for one. Cabrera one for one and walked. So he reached base twice against Scherzer. What do you think? Who's got the edge? Scherzer's not having the kind of start to the year that, you know, certainly his contract, his $210 million contract, would dictate that it should. Miguel got off to a slow start as well. Who's got the edge in that matchup?
Man, I rarely pick against Miguel Cabrera, but I'm going to go with Scherzer today. This is going to be interesting. I think the best part about talking to him yesterday was, like, you just see the way that he talks about Cabrera, and you talk to such a smart baseball guy like Max. He's really smart. He's, like, next-level smart, like, borderline, like, dorky, I'd say. But, like, just hearing him talk about Cabrera and what makes him so good, and just see the kind of respect that he has for him and the excitement he has to pitch against him today. That was really cool to see. I'm going to go with Scherzer just because, like I said, I think that he's going to be pretty geeked to face this Tigers team. And, I mean, obviously Cabrera's the best hitter in the game for my money, but, yeah, I'll go with Scherzer.
Yeah, and Cabrera's slowly got
that average. He has struggled this year, though.
No question. Both of them have. No doubt about it. Themselves-like. I just made up a phrase, I guess, in terms of their stats. Miggy just now creeping up to within, you know, a whisper of 300 here as we get into the middle of May. He's hitting 298 now with 14 driven in. The other side, it's very cool. You know who is living up to his contract? Jordan Zimmermann, worth every penny thus far that Mike Yelich paid him to come over here. And his ERA is at 110, and he's 5-1. Again, first time, kind of a reverse now, first time that he's going to face his old teammates, and the first time he's going to face Bryce Harper, the reigning unanimous National League MVP. Have you talked to Jordan, and what's his mindset as he approaches his former team?
He's excited, but he's just kind of treating it like, like in a normal game. I mean, that's kind of like his MO, and I think that's what makes him so successful, is that, you know, he just goes out there, and he doesn't try to reinvent the wheel. He goes out there, throws the first pitch for strikes, he gets ahead of guys. The thing that's been interesting to me is that his performance has been so consistent throughout the first month, but the strikeouts haven't been as consistent. You know, one game he's striking out one, the next game he's striking out eight. So it just goes to show that some nights he won't have his best stuff, but he's still turning into good, you know, 6, 7, 8 inning. And really, I mean, he's been, there's no question he's been the best pitcher on the Tigers staff so far. I think there'll be a little bit more emotions on the Zimmermann end just because he grew up in the Nationals organization. We had been with them for so long. And I personally think that there's a little bit of, some hard feelings when they went out and they signed Scherzer and they didn't really entertain the possibility of re-signing him. So I think it'll be a little bit more personal on his end, but Zimmerman's a big game pitcher. He's been pitching the playoffs before, so I don't think this will be anything new to him.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting when you think about the opportunity in front of him, because he's going to face, I mentioned, Harper for the first time, and I guess if you got to do it, there's no time like the present because Harper is scuffling a bit. He got off to a red-hot start. We all saw I think he had 6 or 7 home runs in the first 2 weeks of the season. He's got 10, which is still good, and 27 driven in, but the average is all the way down to 252. He is struggling right now. So, you know, this Nationals team, which, of course, got swept by the Cubs, are they a little bit on edge, do you think? You know, we saw Harper get thrown out and then come back on Monday night after the walk-off, maybe flipping off or verbally flipping off an umpire. Are they kind of scuffling right now? Really good time for Jordan to face these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I guess perhaps maybe, I don't know. Wow, that was a horrible answer. I think the Nationals are good, and I think it's pretty
interesting. I do too. I'm just talking about their struggled recently, you know, Anthony, and for Jordan to face his former teammates, I guess I'd rather get them when they're cold than when they were red hot earlier.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the interesting thing we're going to see tonight is that Daniel Murphy's going to be hitting behind Harper. Whereas in the last couple of nights throughout the season, they've had Ryan Zimmermann hitting behind Harper. So I think that'll be interesting because for as hot as Harper was early in the season, well, Daniel Murphy's just that hot right now. Mm. So it'll be interesting. But I think the Nationals have a really good team. I mean, especially when you go look at like a guy like Joe Ross who pitched last night, and he was hit up by right-handers for the first time all season. Well, you just look top to bottom. They have a pretty good starting rotation. You know, Zimmermann, Strasburg. That was crazy how Strasburg, the news of his deal came out during his start on Monday night. But, yeah, I think that I'd go with you that, yeah, it's better to be facing Harper when he's struggling than when he's not. But I feel like with a guy like that, He's never really struggling, you know?
No, I know. I get it. Not just Harper, but, I mean, you know, as a team, too, they have lost, what, 5 out of their last 6, I think, counting yesterday, too, to the Tigers. So, you know, it's just a team that right now is kind of in a bad way. You know what it is, and I don't know if you can answer this or not. You probably didn't get a chance to ask Jordan Zimmer this question, or maybe you heard it asked or not, but the approach to Harper, you know, the Cubs had, of course, they walked him, that major league record. 7 times he went to the plate, 7 times he reached base, never had an official at bat. They walked him 6 times and hit him once. So, you know, and that's hurting. That's hurting right now. Buster Olney wrote about this, too. That's hurting the Nats because they're not getting production from the guy behind him. They're not getting the big blow whenever they put somebody on like Harper. So Jordan, again, you know, facing a guy that, you know, that he might not have to pitch to if he doesn't want to, with the exception of the change that you just said they made in the lineup.
Yeah, but, I mean, just from being around Jordan for, I don't know, only a month now, a couple months, including spring training, I don't think he's going to be intentionally walking Harper. Now, look, there's a situation that's really – really obvious, you know what I mean? Second and third, 2 outs. So yeah, I think it. But I think Zimmerman's a competitor, and I don't think he's gonna waste any of these at bats against any of these Harper at bats. I think he's really looking forward to him. That's the kind of guy Zimmerman is.
Last thing for you, Anthony. We appreciate the time again. This has nothing to do with the actual game tonight, but just since we're talking about the matchup between the Tigers and the Nats, do you think they're eventually going to re-sign Harper, or is Harper on his way to the Yankees, like so many people think?
We've been talking about that. I was actually just talking about this with Drew Verhagen in the Tigers clubhouse, just spitballing some stuff. I mean, I don't think so, man. I think Harper's going to the Yankees. They've been like so quiet in free agency the last couple of years. Harper, you know, I don't know if it's ever since he's been in the big leagues, but you know, I've been reading about Harper, and he's always kind of wanted to play for the Yankees. I mean, imagine how many home runs he'd be hitting at Yankee Stadium. I feel like that is just a match made in heaven there, and whatever the dollar amount is, probably higher than we expect. And
the only reason I asked, Anthony, is because of what they just spent on pitching. You know, they gave Scherzer $210 million. Now they just gave on Monday, Strasburg $175 million for 7 years. They're extending out their pitchers, and I wonder how deep that pocket is. Can they eventually afford Harper? And I just wonder what they're going to have left. So that's a conversation we'll have later because we got to go, and you got to go watch some baseball. Thanks for the time, Anthony. We always appreciate it.
I do, Bob Roberts. See you guys.
All right, brother. Good stuff. There you go. Anthony Fenech joining us right here, and that's all the time we've got on the Extravaganza. Drive Time is coming up next. Jim Cushlin in for Mike Miller. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 3. Have a great one.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off 2 or more select major appliances. Plus, get 3 Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.